Okay, Priya, again, continuing the game theory 5, the world game. And trying to understand the principles, that's what he's talking about, behind what's going on in the big world scene, but also in the small groups, such as in our case here that I use for comparison or example, that of a spiritual movement, organization. And I think that's a very good example because it's very fundamental. It's God, the truth. It's very, how to say, engaging your life with body and soul. It's very deep, the way it affects and influences people who are members of that group or who are target group or that group. So anyway, he's talking here about when there's a big empire, you have a top elite ruling that, and they simply try to attain equilibrium, keeping their subjects, the citizens or members, pacified, satisfied if possible, otherwise some or other keep them down and no revolutions, no, you know, things like that. And then there are the rules of the game, which may be, you know, dictated by the religious ethics or whatever. But there will be factions, or fractions, what do you call it, in the leadership. Different interest groups. So the top, the tops there, they need to deal with that. And well, they need to get practical. Sometimes they break the rules. Sometimes they have to invent new rules. Sometimes, you know, they need to do the needful. So the kind of, as we spoke about last time, the secret societies and, you know, these kind of behind the doors things are going on. But anyway, and they have to have trust between each other. For that, they sometimes declare a common enemy that they fight together, unify, and so on, and unify their people. Therefore, wars are at that time, that point, not just between kings, leaders who want to take from each other or fight each other, but it becomes a way to, as he says, what, unify, you know, strengthen the equilibrium, because we are now fighting a common enemy that unifies us, and so on. But anyway, what happens eventually is that this structure becomes weak, and well, I mean, in countries like Sweden here, for instance, I think it's a good example. People had it good for so many years. They're used to it. They don't need to fight for survival and, you know, work very, very, very hard to build up from poverty. It used to be like that. I mean, when I was a kid, the older generation, grandparents, even a little bit there in the mindset of my parents, but I think you need to go back to grandparents and a couple of generations back, you had to really work hard. I mean, these northern countries, they are rough to live in if you don't know what you're doing, and you need to really work to keep your home heated and together, and you know, the food on the table and the clothes and this and that. So I saw that. I mean, my mother, I mean, working so hard, strong people compared to now, we're weak. So it becomes like that. And to use that on a religious group, that's where you have a religion, a religious society ruled by those up there in the top. And yes, they have their secret society, they have a hierarchy. You can't get up there in their inner chambers unless you're one of them. Trust and all that. But then what happens is that those who are poor, the societies outside there, maybe who you exploited. In other words, the people who are not in your group, who you, they may have been even, but they were exploited or they were treated as enemies. And now you are the big one, the real one, the empire, the Catholic Church, whatever. And these others are just heathen tribes. And those may also be good among them to pick someone who is the evil one, that you can fight against and unify your people against. Now, the interesting thing, what happens here, as he says, that when there's he uses those words, the openness, energy, and cohesiveness. Openness meaning, well, I guess the opposite of that closed in behind closed doors, hidden behind closed doors. You're isolated, and the society you're in, it becomes a bit closed up in itself, self-satisfied. But this, and he said, this poor people, the people out there who have been made poor, either by exploitation or by someone else taking all their resources due to their superior strength and influence. They're just out in the open, so to speak. They are, here we are. Hardly any leaders. We together. And it's easy in that way to gather groups for doing things. And they have energy. They are used to work hard. And cohesion, they can work together like that. So what happens in history, has happened time and time again, is that such poor countries, people from such poor parts of the world, eventually, well, they may first, because they are strong and they are bold, and you know, they might be hired as soldiers, mercenaries, whatever, to do work for this empire, right? They may be brought in to the empire that now needs more people because the population is shrinking due to less incentive to beget children. That's too much work. I will want to enjoy life instead. That kind of thing. So immigration, and yes, we need to fight that other group there. You can help us. We give you weapons, we train you. You are now fighting for us. Heroes, yeah. And then they can do that. We see it in Ukraine, for instance. The Western powers are now, you fight to the last Ukrainian for us, for Western freedom and democracy and all this beautiful. And you may translate it to a religious group. And well, we don't have many members left, so, oh, here you can come. And you can be members of our congregation. Help cleaning the floors and work. But we are not too advanced doing. And then, you know, they are coming in hordes maybe and then taking over. So, because that's then what happens. Now they are trained on weapons, they are powerful soldiers, they are stronger than the empire, and they take over. This is historical fact. The Macedonians down there in Greece, the one of those warring states in China, and so on. But down to our religious group example, or any group really, I'm talking smaller group like that, a few thousand people or whatever, or even down to local groups. You find that some, you know, in the beginning it's openness, it's energy, it's cohesiveness. You're just working together, marathons, you know, just need to get it done. Utility is the principle. And then a bureaucracy develops, meetings, making laws, trying to enforce them. How to do with this, how to do with that, and writing long things that no one reads. Bureaucracy. And up there on top, are the top leaders. Who are then, you know, there's this hierarchical structure where the higher you get to the top, the more closed doors you will have to be allowed in through. I would even say, and I think we would joke a little like that regarding this ISKCON movement that I served in for 20 years, that we are like almost like a parody or caricature of this kind of theocratic countries, and try to make a little country in the country. So, yeah. Which, interestingly enough, was kind of directly based on, you know, older cultures where you kind of establish this little empire story. But the thing is that then you are in a society. It's not a movement anymore of people just work hard and get things done. It's a society where people live. And they have the food on the table, and there's equilibrium. There are still some out there working for them. But when you are in that situation, to maintain it, so it's equilibrium, it seems to go on forever. Now we have made it. Some and sit there and think, satisfied, but maybe not really satisfied anyway. I mean, life is boring and this and that. We want more. So but then you have the outsiders. Those who stepped out of it or weren't allowed in and had to struggle and work hard to make it. to survive. Through that work, that energy, you know, that and that openness, because you need to find solutions, you need to be open to new ideas. You need to be open to learn new things. You need to be open to each other. And that makes you stronger. So it's energy, cohesiveness. That, in a religious, spiritual environment, kind of brings back or returns to what was there originally. So again, what may seem like a constantly returning, recurring threat to the empire top, you know, these are enemies that we should not. Of course, it's very handy because then you can fight those enemies and unify your people, and they can start becoming strong again and learn how to use arms and so on. If they are not defeated before they have time to do that. So, but anyway, then those, the others, are seen as the greatest threat. While if you will go over to them, behind that facade of the demons, you find just ordinary people who had to struggle and had their problems and looked, they're throwing bombs at us and so on, and who then really had to learn things, learn technology, learn philosophy, learn to understand how life works, how to make life work for you. And yes, I mean, when I've met so many people in my life, actually, from all over the world. And if I shall look back, I can say that from my experience, that people often from poorer countries are more interesting to talk with, to be with. More philosophical often and down to earth. So what I want to say here, again in the religious group context, whether that religious group is an entire country or just a local church or temple or whatever, congregation, that while they may be afraid of and get warnings from above, from the leader levels, for the others, the outsiders, the infidels, the whatever bad word is being used. At the end of the day, those are the ones remaining. Because as this group, which thought itself to be an empire, you're not going to take over the world, which actually we I heard it being spoken. I wonder if I didn't even speak like that myself in lectures and like that. We're going to take over the world. This is called Hare Krishna movement. And I guess you would hear that in every little religious sect of the world, especially in the West, where we have this kind of mentality, the colonialist, empire, imperialist Western world. But, you know, when that is being spoken and the members of that congregation hear this being spoken and are now urged to unify against the enemy, either against, with that or against, with us or against us, you know, that kind of thing, then some will, yeah, go for that, sacrifice their lives for the great leader. Some will start doubting that great leader. Will, you know, be expelled, pushed out, or voluntarily step out of that group and be on their own. Be independent. I mean, it's kind of funny when you think about it now. But back then, in the late 70s and 80s, I would say, either you were in or you were out. And if you stepped outside, out of the doors of that, you know, jurisdiction or territory or that was under the control of the emperors or of the leaders of the organization that would take over the world, then you were just gone. You didn't exist anymore. You were an enemy. Don't talk to him or her. I even heard it being said, he's now a demon. Literally, that word being used. Whatever it means, I could never really figure it out, but it's a word that I just started hearing when I came to this Krishna temple. There are demons. And I thought it meant these kind of ghostly horned figures that you hear about in the old Arabian stories or whatever. So all these things, I've been through it. I've seen it. And I don't know how it looks now, today. Therefore, I'm just walking here on my own because I am now one of those. Although never having been expelled or taken made some kind of public statement of leaving that group to join another group. That's often what they do. But, you know, I'm just me. And what I'm doing, I'm doing. But the thing is that I have, I mean, due to the circumstances which came neither from, you know, me being pushed out of me, desiring to just step out. We had to step out because there was this crisis back in late 90s where you could not anymore, especially if you had or wanted to have a family, you could not expect to get, you know, find your social situation there safe and healthy and strong and so on. You have to take care of yourself. And then that meant for me, I'm talking from my own life example, at age 44, I stepped, you know, I had got myself an apartment in Stockholm, stepped out into the unemployment office, and were told that you are too old to get a job. So from that time, this was 99, to now, 20, what is it, 6-7 years later, yeah, 27 years later, there is a story to be told involving hard work, energy, openness to any opportunities, possibilities, ideas. And cohesiveness, well, I mean, trying to work with others would have to do a lot myself, but then finding others like myself, old Krishna devotees members who had gone through or were going through the same struggle. And now after 27 years, blessing those years, because I learned a lot. I had to build up my own personal strength and make sure I ate well to have a healthy body. Otherwise, you know, I couldn't take care of my duties here. There were... You know, a bit, I never say I was poor, I've always felt wealthy. But from Swedish standards today, I guess I'm considered poor, living under the existential minimum. But I feel rich. Because I learned something about what it means to be poor and rich. It's not about material things. It's about being rich in your soul, in your life experience. So anyway, what I think we are seeing now, according to game theory probably, if we look at this ISKCON scenario, and which I think we are clearly seeing and have seen since many years, that most Krishna devotees, most of those devotees was who came and joined that movement through the years, we now live like the way I do. It's private Vaishnavas, you could say. And then we work together as we see fit and as we like to do that. And that empire, if I dare use that word, well, it saw itself like that for a while back in the 70s and 80s, that we are coming empire of the world, right? So I'm not exaggerating too much. It's shrinking very much. Well, there came Russians into it, there came Indians into it in the West also. So it appears to be growing. But not from the ones who started it initially here. So that's another story. But then the point is, some can think, stand there and say, be depressed and say, oh, we are shrinking, it's not going well. Or since cognitive dissonance kicks in, everything is fantastic and we are great and we are growing. And you just, because if you were allowing yourself to see that something else is going on, it's going down, then you may experience life as meaningless and everything you believed in was actually not true, and you will get depressed. And this is, you know, religion, spirituality is very powerful because you invest your entire, not only your physical life, but your spiritual, your everything, your soul into it. Your entire worldview. So anyway, but then what I'm trying to say here, why I'm speaking all this, is that it is not a disaster. It's just a change. Something that turned dysfunctional, illusory, not really the living thing, just, you know, turn into some bureaucracy, some kind of, you know, that kind of equilibrium as it seemed, where people lived comfortably and tell stories. You know, the old days, they tell stories about their young pioneer years, and the kids go, whoa, amazing. Just as when I was young, grandparents may have told stories from the First World War and parents from the Second World War. Ooh, how could you survive? So, yeah. But what happens then is that those who were gone, you know, there are some, it's interesting, I mean, I think there are still those, and I think that some who approach me now as friends, quote-unquote, are on a secret mission to try to bring back the old blooped devotees. So they, you know, someone said, I'm like a chameleon. You know, they can be anyone they want to be. They can be like you to fit into your social environment and then pull you out of there and into the real one gradually, just as we did when we made devotees, quote-unquote, back in the days. So it's interesting sociologically. But then the thing is, but now it's getting more and more visible beyond any, you know, doubt or denial abilities that the empire is small and weak and isn't an empire at all. Which, of course, when we speak about it like this, is quite evident. But that the people who disappeared, quote-unquote, out into the society, the karmic society, they continued being devotees of God. And, I mean, we're talking about that sometimes. Even had to learn it much more to depend on God. I mean, when you're 44 years old and you go to the unemployment office and they say you're told to get a job, then to make it through the rest of that life up to pension, it requires some, not only hard work, but for devotee, hopefully having understood that much, it requires understanding what this surrender means, sanagati, you know, every day waking up, just praying to God, yeah, you take care of me, I trust you, just give me the intelligence and clarity to always see that you are here with me and turn to you and not just run off on my own again into another pitfall. So you learn a lot. And you learn, I learned how to renovate old houses, how to start and run your own company, how to do good work that you can get, paid for decently, and so on. To maintain, take care of, do your part in a family, raise children, see them grow up into adults. Incredible experiences and challenges one after another along that way. But you become strong. And there is now, I would say, if I look at this situation here, there's an openness among such devotees of, such devotees of God, such people spiritually, toward each other and toward new ways and ideas. And there's energy, there's expertise, experience, wisdom of life. And they are becoming friends for real. So they're back to how it was there. Full circle, but it's a spiral. You have learned something around that circle. To the pioneer days, to the here we are, what we're going to do, and look, this beautiful knowledge here, this beautiful life here in Krishna consciousness, God consciousness, universal truths, not just some sectarian religion. We're all parts and parcel of God, Goddess and God. And here we are. So, while this may be from those inside of what's left of that empire, which they think is everything, it's all there is, and there's nothing outside of that. It's just darkness. And they see that shrinking, and they can't even allow themselves to see that. Or they're struggling, and they're fighting, and they're factions, and no, you are wrong, I'm right, and we're going to make the real leadership here and take over. And this usual thing, backstabbing, I've seen that too. So we are talking from a real situation here. But we're talking about sociology, I guess. That's what it is, social phenomena in groups of people. Not even about specific types of social groupings, but I'm taking this ISKCON as an example. And when I do, I'm kind of even amazed that it fits very well into, this. And I guess every other social group among humans, because it's a human thing, I guess. And that's what makes it interesting, because we should start understanding our life, including our social life, from the very essential, fundamental principles that are acting here, or that we are acting along. That's why knowledge, consciousness, and what we have in our consciousness, how we use our consciousness, is fundamental and is of crucial importance. So when someone says, why are you sitting talking philosophy? You should talk politics, or just take a beer and be with us. they don't understand. Or rather, they might have bad experiences with people just sitting speculating uselessly and aimlessly just for fun or for passing time. But here we are talking about the real thing, how to live our lives, how to get the world together. And that's why what I sum up in this word, Dharma, that's what it's about. That's what we are talking about here. So back to it. If you find yourself sitting on that or on either side, or on the inside, quote unquote, of that dwindling empire, don't be afraid. No fear. No problem. It's happening. What's happening now is happening to open up our eyes again for the real thing. To return to where we were when, you know, Prabhupada came here and started it. A group of people who have chosen to be devotees of God with all that it includes and involves of being friends and helping and serving each other rather than trying to just take from others for your own project or whatever. Working together as equals, sisters and brothers. So it's just, and I again would say from my life experience that maybe this is my theory, I may be wrong. In spiritual society, or groups where people share deep spiritual values, especially with God in the center, and not just using God for political purposes or for supplying us what we need, more money or whatever, but actually the humble, here we are all God's children, and we should all nicely go back to our parents again and be good kids, and you know, and we're a happy family. When there's a group of such people, it seems to me that when things go off the rail, when there are illusions, these kind of illusions we're talking about here, these social groupings, these kind of effects that are arising because of a lack of understanding of Dharma, whatever word you want to use for it, you know, the way the world works, the way you can do things so everyone, including yourself, will be happy and satisfied. When that knowledge is lacking and it's more ruled by adharmic principles, even asuric principles, read the Bhagavad Gita and you know what I mean, then that is going down into the lower modes of nature, the darker modes of nature, you know, the Raja, passion, me, making more money, enjoying more, more sex, more food, more this and that. You know, driven by desires. And the tama, the darkness, when illusions take over. And there is not only lust, but there is, you know, greed and anger and hatred and envy and illusion. So when it's all there in the Bhagavad Gita and the wisdom, scriptures of wisdom, I would say, probably from all countries of the world, teaching us to avoid that, the vices, go for the virtues. But now we became materialistic, the humans, since late 19th century or something. And that materialism is illusory. It's not reality. But you can see how it permeates the societies of the planet today and how it erodes them at the very foundations. Because it's not based on sat, on reality, on truth. And when you speak about Sanatana Dharma, you can also say Sattvata Dharma, you know, it's resting on eternal reality, actual reality. So what we have here, if someone is now looking at the world, which I think most of us are, at least I am, and scratching our heads and wondering what's going on, you know, is the end of the world or what? And it seems like some of these big religious empires, yes, I mean, some say that we have this religious aspect to this World War III situation that we find ourselves in. And I even heard yesterday that the undoubtedly most experienced diplomat of the world, Sergei Lavrov from Russia, said openly that we probably should say that we are at the beginning stage of the Third World War. And when he says it, I think we should listen. He has seen world wars. So, yeah, that's where we are. And if you then want to just take another glass of something that dulls your mind and wait for sweet death's release, then you don't need to, because I really think that what we are seeing here is what we are talking about in this small example here of a spiritual society. Again, religion is fundamental. You don't get away from it. The soul and God and what's it all about and all this, right? But, you know, then it's our God and the others, they are worshipping the devil, so we should just kill them. And that's what we find going on today. And what others are saying is that what we see going on today is the fall of an empire, the Western colonialist empire, which, in case you are not already well familiar with colonialism, it's worth studying the history, the actual history of colonialism, as described not from the colonialists themselves. I mean, we hardly even learned about it in school, but from those who were the victims of it. So it's crumbling, and if you sit in that, you may think my life will crumble as well, which it may be doing. But you know, when it crumbles, what remains are us, ordinary people down here on the ground, and we can grow potatoes in our gardens, and we can help each other out. Because we don't hate each other. Do you hate Russians? Do you hate Iranians? Do you hate Chinese? Indians? I mean, do we hate other people just because they are of another race or nationality? Just because of some weird, strange person in the leadership seat of your country? I mean, look at those now. Open eyes and see what they are. I mean, what kind of... Especially the big emperor over there in the West. I mean, I don't believe I'm awake sometimes. It's just incredible. It's a Hollywood movie. So it's good that all this crumbles down because it's illusory. And again, that materialism that it's built upon, it's illusory. It's not reality. It's not philosophy of life, which it is. It's a false philosophy. You don't become happy and satisfied just by getting more money and things and sex and food and all of that. You become greedy, selfish, impersonal towards others. And thus your life as well will become unhappy and you will spread unhappiness around you. It's as simple as that. So what I meant was that I think when these things, which are simply symptoms of the qualities of this modern, very materialistically saturated age and human culture, when that slips into even these spiritual movements like that, as long as they are, the people in them are honest and seeking the real thing, then there's even less possibility for such illusions to continue existing, because the environment is so, reality, truth, philosophy, questioning, and it should be that. It's not that if you have another opinion than I do, then I should kill you or expel you or tell everyone that you are dangerous and stay away from you. Rather, I should welcome that. And let's have a discussion, public debate or whatever. That's, how we have always done it here in Sweden. And I, back to the ISKCON Krishna movement here, I was serving here in Govindas in Stockholm for, since the mid-80s. Well, back to the late 70s when we had our old Govindas. And, engage in this, in the radio and so on, the debate and people visiting, and they called in on the phone and we would discussing and they were challenging. And you have to meet these challenges constantly, and it makes you strong. You have to question your beliefs and your convictions, not just close yourself up and not talk to the others who might shake your faith, but rather face it, not in the fanatical, I'm going to pound you in the head here and tell you that Krishna is the only true way and you just accept that or you're a demon. But here, let's hear what you have to say, and then I will say what I have to say, and we can talk like civilized people with respect for each other and keep peace and maybe even learn from each other. And that's the idea of it. And again, that's how it works in this open situation, open society, where there's an open dialogue and discussion and debate, not between enemies who just, you know, use it to fight each other, but to try to find common ground and get wiser, a humble kind of meeting place and exchange. So again, and I'm kind of speaking a lot about this these days, lately, that, yeah, we sat at home with my friends, Paramananda Mandahasa, and their sons. How, you know, the Vaishnava community, it's here in the homes of all of us who are still as much devotees of God as back then. And some of whom, for instance, they did huge sacrifices of work in their lives for this Krishna consciousness movement and should therefore be honored. And I say, keep saying it, they should have their names engraved in brass plates on the walls of the temples, especially now in this court, that they paid for by their hard sacrifice of work. So that's where the actual people are, not just some, you know, paperwork institution defined by bunches of papers of laws and constitutions and this and that, but the people who are now maybe not that much in there anymore, but who might, of course, and who often do it, support whatever projects they find are, well, worth supporting. So just as we find it in the, you know, the Swedish society, things really go down south, which I think we should expect now without being, you know, unnecessarily pessimistic, but more realistic. But yes, when the empire falls, grow potatoes in your garden, help each other. Here we can exchange old clothing for our children. That people are very innovative, and then again it starts to get stronger, get ideas, energy. And I say back to normal again. Because normal life on this planet is going on down here, not up in the ivory towers of the great intellectuals or politicians or generals and so on. And again, in the life of a Krishna devotee or the Krishna devotees, that's where life is going on as well. And me and you and every one of us being here with God right now. That's all there is. It's all there is needed. That awareness, the waking up, and that's why Srila Prabhupada, he was emphasizing his books, the spreading of knowledge, not the building of big mansions or societies, bureaucracies. And again, the friendship between devotees. And he built his ISKCON society to serve that purpose, not to become some big hierarchical monolithic institution that everyone should serve. So I guess many, they agree with that. But while some sit there inside those chambers still discussing, then how should we make it? What shall we write now in our new laws, or bylaws, or constitutions? And then arguing about that, no, you're wrong, no, I'm right. Most today, they just don't even care about that. They don't have time for that. We live our lives. And when we meet, sit and talk, we often talk about those best years when things were real. Yeah, maybe we can do it again. And maybe that's where we are now. And if we want to do something together, then we do. Otherwise, we leave each other in peace. So, all this long harangue became this little long, because it's positive. I mean, we ordinary folks, the grassroots, we just need to not fall for the propaganda, illusory narrative worldview that is always constructed in times of war or war-ish times by the government who is, you know, on top of you there. So I'm sitting in Sweden, I can see so clearly that the whole story that we're being served in the media is tailored. It's very, I wouldn't even say well-crafted, but meticulously crafted to keep us pacified. And really to make us not see what's actually going on. Because when you're sitting inside a crumbling empire, that's the last thing the ones up there in the top of that want you to see. Because you're supposed to be the biggest and the strongest in the world, right? And we should now all rather unite fighting the evil ones, the demons, the Hitlers. So yeah, I have spoken here from this game theory as presented by, I would say, a very smart person. He calls himself Professor Jiang, I think it is. And he has his YouTube channel. And he says that, yeah, this theory can be used We find it at all times in history. We find it in the biggest world events and the small local events. You and your friends. It's a game we play for making things work out for us. So I took it here just to test it, or more or less, but or kind of inspired by that way of thinking. Wanted to try it out. And ended up talking about, you know, parallel one relatively small society of the ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which I mainly have experience of when it comes to social life, and the global world situation today. How this, and I think it's quite clear how the principles behind it all are universal. Because it's really about how we groups of humans function. We're not all that different. So anyway, thank you, Hare Krishna.